Welcome once again to our discussion on intelligent design and biological evolution debate. I'm your host, Monsignor Larry Moran, Pastor Emeritus at St. Patrick Catholic Church, and our guest is Ron Eldred, who teaches religion, government, and history at John Paul II Catholic High, which has now moved up to 1330 Lafayette Street, the old and the renovated Sacred Heart School building. Ron, once again, welcome to the program. We've covered some really difficult ideas trying to talk about this intelligent design, which is a big argument in our country, particularly in the public school system. And of course, biological evolution has always raised questions any place and every place since Darwin came up with the idea. So perhaps you could summarize what we've said up to this time, so we can kind of, for those who may have missed some of the programs, and those perhaps maybe who didn't catch all the things we were trying to say in the first three programs.
We have been discussing the debate going on in the country, as you just alluded to, regarding the teaching of intelligent design versus evolution in the public schools. Primarily in this country, it's an issue. And for the last, especially it's heated up in the last, probably about 10 or 12, maybe 15 years. Proponents of intelligent design claim that the theory of evolution is atheistic and unscientific, whereas proponents of evolution maintain that intelligent design is religion masking as science. We're going to try to resolve this issue in this series. We began this series by briefly going over philosophical arguments for intelligent design, something that we had done in some detail during our series on reasons to believe in Catholic apologetics, which I think has been run a couple of times. From a philosophical perspective, intelligent design has been around for, it's been used for over two millennia to prove God's existence. Recall that intelligent design is one of St. Thomas Aquinas' five ways for proving God's existence. It's sometimes called the teleological argument from the Greek word telos, which means design, purpose,
plan.
That kind of thing, yes.
Okay, now we, as Catholics, we've dealt with intelligent design from the very beginning.
Well, St. Augustine in the 4th century, in fact, if I have a car ride, he was the person who first used the term creationism, which got to be a big thing in the 20th century in this country, and the intelligent design movement evolved out of the creationist movement in this country.
Okay.
Then we examined how scientists in the 19th century applied the idea of intelligent design to scientific explanations for the evolution of the earth and living things. This theistic or religious science, if we can put the two terms together, some would say that'd be an oxymoron, religious science, if you will, came to be called natural theology or natural religion. Again, we're thinking in terms of the 19th century.
What we could learn from reason.
Yeah, and we threw in a few names and things like that in our first three sessions in regard to this matter. Natural theology is defined as an attempt to find evidence for the existence of God or an intelligent designer without recourse to supernatural revelation. During the 19th century, the natural theology movement stimulated scientists to collect fossils and make voyages of various types. That's how Darwin got started, on a voyage he took on a boat called the HMS Beagle. That's when he began to formulate some of his ideas, particularly when he visited an island called the Galapagos Islands off the coast of Chile. I think it belongs to Chile, if I recall right. The islands do. And not only to collect fossils, but also other biological specimens that would ultimately lead to Darwin's evolutionary theory of the origin of the species in 1859. Many of today's advocates of theistic evolution postulate a divine designer, much as did the 19th century theistic scientists. I'm talking about now, late 20th, early 21st century advocates of this theistic evolution.
Now, you're even talking about some people who are quite reputable scientists.
Some of them, yes.
All right.
And theistic evolution is the idea that the theory of evolution is completely compatible with the concept of an intelligent supernatural designer. In other words, put simply, that is just simply the way God did it, through the evolutionary processes, rather than separate instantaneous acts of creation as such for each species. I think in some respects that late 20th century intelligent design theory can be considered a modern development of this natural theology we've been talking about. Now, since we're considering intelligent design versus the theory of biological evolution in this series, this is over the first three half-hour sessions, we next explain the scientific evolutionary theory of random variation and natural selection, which is a theory that scientists claim does not need God as designer and as a cause, at least some scientists, and probably the great majority of them would argue that. But there is a variety of evolutionary theory that does make room for God, and this is called theistic evolution, which is a form of natural theology and means, simply, as I said a while ago, that's the way God did it. Theistic evolution is the idea that religious teachings about God and creation are compatible with some or all of the modern scientific understanding about biological evolution. And Catholics have always been comfortable with this view. I heard a gentleman say the other day that when he took biology at Shawley High School a number of years ago, that basically that's kind of the approach that they took in the school, this idea of theistic evolution, to the extent that it might be true.
That God is at the beginning.
Yes, God designed it, set it that way, you know. But also, any time God can play a part, he plays a part in it. But a lot of times he allows what we call secondary causes to operate. He's the primary cause, and he allows the secondary causes, which he designed, to be operative. It's the atheistic variety, the godless variety, that we Catholics object to. Nonetheless, the great majority of scientists oppose even these theistic views and instead support some variation on the theme of random variation and natural selection to explain the existence of life on Earth without a need for God's role.
Now, that's the big problem for us as Catholics.
That's the biggest problem.
Without a need for God's role.
And as you see later on, when we get to the last two or three sessions, where we'll be talking about the Catholic Church's view, and Cardinal Schönberg, for example, and Pope Benedict XVI, then you'll see that basically that's essentially their view. Pius XII's view, I think, probably, you know, earlier too. After looking at intelligent design from a philosophical perspective, then we considered it as a science. And from a scientific point of view, at least from the perspective of the intelligent design proponents, intelligent design is a view that certain features of the universe and of living things can best be accounted for by an intelligent cause, not an undirected process such as random variation or genetic mutation and natural selection. Intelligent design scientists look for existing empirical, that is, observable, evidence that implies life on Earth must have been designed by an intelligent agent or agents. The scientific evidence of intelligence put forth by intelligent design proponents include irreducible complexity. We looked at these a little bit in one of our sessions. Information mechanisms, specified complexity, and fine-tuned universe. All of which can be reduced to the idea that certain biological systems are simply too complex to have evolved naturally from simpler or less complete predecessors. That they had to be designed by a super intelligent being that most intelligent designers identify with God.
Okay, so the intelligent designers are saying that because of the complexity of everything, as you mentioned before, of the human eye, the human heart system, even the feather, the way a bee makes his hive, that there's obviously design in this, and they're saying from a scientific viewpoint We cannot accept a random selection or unguided mutation.
That's correct.
Survival of the fittest.
You might recall in our series on reasons to believe Catholic apologetics, we spent about two or three half-hour sessions just looking at some of these different
complexities.
These complexities, yes.
Yeah.
Looking at some of the statistics and things like that that the intelligent designers put forth to try to prove their point.
That
there is an intelligent designer behind this complex universe.
And that's no problem for us as Catholics?
No.
Okay.
On the other hand, opponents, which are the great majority of the scientific community, say that intelligent design is not a science because the supernatural intervention in the origin of life cannot be tested by experimentation, cannot generate any predictions, and proposes no new hypotheses. Therefore, intelligent design is a pseudoscience, they claim. That is, it's a false science and should not be taught in the public schools as science. That's the whole issue, and we're going to try to resolve that before we get through with this series. Furthermore, many legal scholars, maintain that intelligent design is a religious argument to prove God's existence, and to allow it to be taught in the public schools would violate the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment, which states that, quote, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, end of quote. Sometimes this is called the separation of church and state clause. Opponents maintain that intelligent design is nothing more than creationism, which was declared unconstitutional to teach in the public schools by the Supreme Court of the United States in the case of Edwards versus Aguilar in 1987. Now, creationism or creation science refers to the attempts by creationists, especially those who believe in a young earth of less than 10,000 years, to use a scientific method to support their side of the creation evolution controversy. Creation science supporters attempt to prove that the existing scientific evidence best supports a literal interpretation of the Bible, biblical account of creation. Advocates of creation science believe that the earth can best be scientifically accounted for by a flood geology instead of a gradual evolutionary or uniformitarian model of geology that requires many millennia. They think that the Genesis account of the flood of Noah's time is historically accurate and that scientific evidence exists to prove it. I've seen several programs on TV that where they had information of that type. They believe that creationism is the best explanation of the Earth's formation or creation.
So creationism is people saying we want to follow the description as it is in the Bible, literally in the book of Genesis.
That's essentially true.
According to the 6 days of creation.
Yes. And they're mainly members of evangelical or fundamentalist Christian denominations that subscribe to the doctrine of biblical inerrancy, which involves that literal interpretation. Sometimes that's called fundamentalism. Although Catholics are free to accept this point of view, for the most part, Catholics are comfortable, as I said a while ago, with the idea that the earth and life on it gradually developed over long periods of time, as long as design and creation is attributed to God, and not simply the result of blind, random variation and natural selection. This is so because we are not bound to a strictly literal interpretation of the Bible. But the Church allows for spiritual interpretations as well. So consequently, we don't see the Bible necessarily, and that's the key, the word necessarily, as a scientific or historical text. Although biblical truth is compatible with scientific truth, as John Paul, of course, wrote very extensively on that subject, especially in his famous encyclical Faith and Reason, and Fide et Ratio, I think, in Latin, or the Bible is a historical text. But the Bible does contain a lot of accurate historical information, of course. Catholics follow the saying of Cardinal Baronis, who said in 1598 that, quote, the Bible teaches the way to go to heaven, but not the way the heavens go. In other words, it's not necessarily meant to be a literal scientific text or an historical textbook or whatever.
Good quote.
Nonetheless, the great majority of the scientific community overwhelmingly dismiss creation sciences as valid science. claiming it is pseudoscientific or a false science. Moreover, critics claim that intelligent design is simply another name for creationism. Therefore, it too is pseudoscientific. I understand that the modern use of the term intelligent design began after Edwards versus Aguilar in 1987, when the court ruled that creationism is unconstitutional in public school science curriculum. Opponents of intelligent design claim that after this decision, the word creationism was changed to intelligent design in subsequent drafts of the principal creationist textbook of Pandas and People, subtitled The Central Question of Biological Origins. And then we wrapped up the last session by saying that critics of intelligent design claim it too is pseudoscience and should not be taught in the public schools. They claim that intelligent design is nothing more than a form of disguised creationism. And this basically brings us to our topic, today's topic, what is science, and is intelligent design scientific? I think before we can judge whether or not the critics of intelligent design are correct by saying that intelligent design is not scientific, until we look at what science means. What do the scientists mean when they say they're doing science? What are the features of science? What are the steps or the method of science? And then we can come back and say, do the ideas do that? Do the people in intelligent design, are they practicing this method? Are they using these features?
But in fairness, don't the intelligent design people say, we think the definition of science should be expanded?
Yes, they're claiming that they do use the scientific method. They're also claiming, as you say, that considerations also should, philosophical matters should also be considered in the whole process.
Okay.
Educational process.
Well,
which is an expansion, of course, of
an expansion.
The definition of science.
Right. And, of course, the majority of scientists would say, no, we shouldn't extend. We should not extend the...
Because they say it's not scientific to do so. So, therefore, it should not be in a science classroom.
Okay.
In a public school.
Well, this brings us around today's topic. What is science, and is intelligent design scientific, at least according to the definition that scientists want to box into what is real science?
The scientific method refers to a body of techniques or a set of steps that scientists employ to investigate phenomena, and by phenomena we mean, of course, something to be observed, and the acquisition of new knowledge of the natural world without considering whether or not the supernatural exists. The proponents of intelligent design have often asserted that their own position is not only scientific, but it is even more scientific than scientific evolution. They claim that their position better accounts for the facts. Because of their belief, they have called for a redefinition of science that you mentioned a while ago as a revived natural theology or natural philosophy to allow for non-naturalistic theories. Such as intelligent design. In other words, they are demanding an expanded definition of science. However, this is contrary to how philosophers of science have drawn the lines of that define science. And traditionally, scientists have maintained that for a theory to qualify as scientific, it must contain several features.
Okay, what are the features that scientists say must be applied for a thing to be truly scientific?
Well, we won't go into this in detail, but we'll just mention some of them. Well, first, it has to be useful. It has to be controlled. There has to be controlled experiments and things of that sort. It has to be what's called parsimonious. In other words, by calling science parsimonious is meant science is thrifty or sparing in proposed explanations. You got to make the explanations as simple as possible. This is philosophically known as Occam's razor. I'm sure you studied that in seminary. Of course, he was a Catholic priest and theologian, if I recall right, way back in the Middle Ages. In other words, this basically means that a scientific explanation should be as simple as possible, yet account for all the facts. It has to be empirically testable. In other words, it must be tested by controlled, observable experiments. It has to be made based on multiple observations. Not just one experiment is going to do the job. You got to have other people come along and test it to see if the results turn out the same. It has to be correctable. It has to be progressive. These are just various things that it has to be objective, meaning that the practice of science must be objective to avoid bias when interpreting data. And by objective is meant something relating to or being an object or phenomenon, something that can be perceived with the senses by all observers. And then finally, peer review. This is very important. This is a final feature. Scientists must completely document their data and methodology so that they can be carefully scrutinized by other scientists and researchers. And this allows others the chance to verify the results by attempting to duplicate them. So these are all things, these are all features that science, that scientists maintain, have to be present before you're doing science.
Okay, and the one, perhaps the one or the two they stress the most would be it has to be testable by a microscope or a telescope or some material means of testing a thing, and that it has to have peer review would be a secondary thing they say. There's not enough scientists who are behind this intelligent design science, as they called it. Those would be the two main objections that keep coming up?
Yes. For any theory or hypothesis to be considered scientific, it must ideally meet, if not all of these features that we just mentioned a while ago, but at least certainly most of them.
Okay.
And the fewer criteria they're met, the less scientific it's considered to be, certain any kind of work. If it meets only a couple, obviously the two you mentioned would have to be minimally those, and they're probably the most important, or none at all, then of course it cannot be treated as scientific in any meaningful sense of the word. And of course this is what scientists are saying that intelligent design doesn't do. It doesn't live up to all of these features. Maybe none of them.
they certainly not testable.
Yes.
Okay, because it gets into causes, which is reasoning at work. Okay, well, you said the method of science is a set of steps. What are the steps of the scientific method?
Well, science has been, or the scientific method has been defined as a body of techniques for investigating phenomena and acquiring new knowledge, as well as for correcting and integrating previous knowledge. I'm quoting some definition here. It is based on observable, empirical, measurable evidence and is subject to rules of reasoning, end of quote. It has been said that science is more of a way of thinking than it is a body of knowledge, but basically it's a set of systematic steps used to understand the reality or causes of phenomena or observable facts.
So we're always back to this observable facts, something you can demonstrate materially.
Although specialized procedures are used in different areas of scientific inquiry, there are common identifiable features that distinguish scientific inquiry from other methods. For example, observation, description, measurement, and definition of problems. That's one of the first steps. You have to identify the problem. You have to see it as some kind of a problem. You have to observe it. You have to describe it. You have to measure it. You have to define it. That's the first step usually. Then you have to develop a hypothesis, which is nothing more than an educated guess as to what you think is the cause of that particular phenomena. We won't get into dependent, independent variables, but that's what they're actually looking at. And then they have to test it. This step is a scientific process. It requires performing experiments and collecting data to test the validity or genuineness of the hypothesis. And so they design experimental studies to test their predictions for accuracy. And a hypothesis is not considered to be scientific. If it can't be tested, it's not considered scientific. And then they have to analyze and interpret the data. Any kid who's had biology, almost everybody's had biology sometime or another, or maybe a class in chemistry or physics in high school, And, you know, you've been through these steps. It's, you know, really nothing new. And then you have to formulate theories. Theories are statements of a higher level of predictability than hypotheses. In other words, if a hypothesis is tested enough by enough of different people, and it, you still keep getting the same results or close to the same results, then you can begin to say, well, this is probably true, a very high degree of probability of truth. So they begin to call it a theory and not just simply a hypothesis.
Well, hypothesis is an educated guess. Possibility, but a theory would be much more evidence that there seems to back up this idea.
And this is important because later on when we talk about John Paul II, he made a statement back a number of years ago, back in 1993 or 4, somewhere through that period, that he thought that the theory of evolution was more than a hypothesis, which caused a heck of a flap all over the world. And so we'll come back and look at that. But what we're looking at right now is necessary, this distinction between a hypothesis and a theory.
Good.
Before, in other words, was he really saying then it's really a theory? And a statement that's of a higher degree of predictability and probability than a hypothesis. Was he saying that? We'll come back and look at
what
that.
What was
later.
He really saying?
Yeah, what was he really saying?
Okay, we'll take that later on, as you say. Have you been describing what scientists want to demand for something to be really science or scientific?
Yeah, pure science is the study of phenomena with a goal of understanding its causes, thus adding to the body of knowledge in the various fields of what we call science. It is acquiring knowledge for the sake of knowledge to some extent, but in the real world, most knowledge has practical applications and can be used for understanding physical and social problems. And so the application of scientific knowledge to the solving problems, and I might add the creating of problems, is called applied science. And I believe that few scientists pursue their profession solely to expand knowledge for the sake of knowledge, but usually have problems in mind that they desire to solve. And in the process, hopefully benefit humankind in some way.
All right, we've got a minute or so. Tell us more about applied science.
I can best explain applied science by giving an example. For example, chemists know from observation and experimentation that that certain chemicals are combined, they can predict the effect or the outcome with a high degree of certainty. You can have an explosion, maybe, you know, and you can predict that with an awfully high degree of. Furthermore, meteorologists, they know that if certain conditions are present in the atmosphere, that certain outcomes of weather are likely to occur. However, at this stage, the degree of predictability in the field of meteorology is much less than that of chemistry. Nonetheless, they are continuing to discover knowledge that better helps them to predict the weather with the purpose of either learning to control it, let's say by seeding clouds, or at least providing people with advanced warnings enabling them to take cover with an approaching violent weather. Social scientists and psychologists also try to solve human problems by applying the method of science, but because of free will and other factors, the behavior of human beings is much harder to predict and control than physical or chemical phenomena.
So here's a good place, I think, for us to conclude, Ron. Applied science is always trying to solve some kind of problem about what's going to explode and not explode, or how we can predict the weather better and the like.
Or solve problems.
Well, thank you for being with us on our debate for intelligent design and biological evolution that's crossed our country in the last 10 years especially. May God bless you always and in all ways.